With your hands in your pockets, but my heart in that locket you wear. Bittersweet is the winter, the snowflakes won't glimmer when you're not there. Bittersweet is the winter, the snowflakes won't glimmer when you're not there. And now I'll ask you something silly.
Hello and welcome to Mixed Media Talks, a forum for artists to talk shop with each other and go deep into the intersections between a wide variety of different media forms, process, philosophy, all things that touch art in our lives. I hope to have a little fun with our guests, getting to nerd out while we do it. I'm your host, Amelia Hogan, a mixed media artist, singer, painter, book artist, and I have a deep love of all things art. Welcome to today's guest, who is Lilith Era. An actor, a dancer, a choreographer, a singer, musician, poet. Welcome, welcome. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that you're doing these days?
Sure, yeah. So like you said, I'm an actor, musician, poet, kind of in that triple threat world, but then also a poet, a journaler, a doodler, a playwright, a director, embroiderer, any kind of art I can get my hands on. Lately, I have been working on rehearsing for an upcoming play at San Francisco Playhouse as a swing and understudy. It's my first time being a swing in any official capacity, so that's really fun because it means that I get to learn multiple roles and kind of learn the play in and out. I'm also in a fun indie band called Kitchenette. Yeah.
Do you have any fun projects coming up in particular? You mentioned where you're going to be a swing. What's the name of the production?
It's called Heroes of the Fourth Turning.
Is that a live production and people can maybe fill one of those seats?
It is, yeah. It's a live production. It starts in a couple of weeks. I don't know for sure if I will be going on or not. We will see. But the cast is wonderful. So either way, go see it. Yeah, it's really exciting. I just started rehearsals.
So I'm sort of new to your project with Kitchenette. Tell me about it. I want to know. That sounds great.
It's also kind of new to me. It started sort of unintentionally. My partner works at the Mills Community Farm. And so everyone in the band, save for myself, are people who also work at the farm. Fun thing where the farm manager is also a singer and musician, and she'll be like, let's sing! And so everyone's gotten into this musical way of gardening and with the earth and things like that. So it was born out of a jam session after that at our house. It was just kind of like a fun, he's like the most wide descriptor I could give it, but it's whatever we're inspired by at the moment.
Does it have a flavor or a bent to it? Indie, but...
We all kind of have different things that we pull from. So sometimes it ends up being jazzy, it ends up being folky, ends up being kind of punky. It just depends on the day and the instruments we have at our disposal and who's writing what.
It's been a minute since we've actually talked at length anyway. You have since gone to my old alma mater, Mills College, for some of your formal academic training and some of this stuff. What can you tell us about how your art has changed while you're in it through being in that new format or setting to learn more formal training around it?
It's kind of funny because I went to music school and theater school to get this formal academic training, and I've come out of it so far with less of a value on formal academic training and more of a value on just making stuff and being experimental. Especially Mills' music program has so much of an emphasis on experimenting and doing it for self-expression and trying new things. Put some frog sounds in the music and see how that works. And so I've actually come out of it like more almost back to grassroots, back to trying things out as a little kid in in some ways.
Right. Instead of, here's how you have to complete the craft and the technique and all of it. There is a lot of emphasis in that liberal arts institution, specifically related to fuck around and find out.
Yeah, literally.
see what happens? And problem solving, which I think is actually the most valuable piece about that. Getting back to an exploratory modality.
Yeah.
Is there someone that you feel has totally influenced in a surprising way the work that you do?
Well, recently I was able to take some classes at ACT in San Francisco, sort of through Mills. And I took this devising class that was completely not what I expected. I kind of came into it and was like, okay, yeah, we're all going to write a realistic play and act it out. It was a lot more. Our professor's basically motto was try it and find out. And we were trying to get away from realism, and we were trying to get away from everything that I had learned that theater was or theater should be. And at the end, we had this piece that all of us were like, what does it mean? We don't know what it means. And he was, well, ask the audience after and you'll figure out what it means. And so that kind of changed my whole perspective on how you can make things and how you can view things, and that it doesn't always have to be, here's what I want the audience to feel, here's what I want it to mean, here's what it means to me, and here's what it should mean to you. It can be more fluid and more open. So that class had a huge effect on me as an artist.
Yeah. Why do you do performing arts?
Because I love it, and I feel like if I don't do it, I will die.
But why do you love it?
I think it's such an interesting way to tell stories through performance, because you get to be inside of the stories as you're telling them. I grew up loving reading and writing and things like that, but discovering theater and being, oh, I can live inside this world. That's the coolest thing ever to me.
Create an environment physically that matches an imagination space. Are there goals for you? Are there places you want to go? Do you have big dreams, or do you even have small dreams? What's your intention?
I guess right now, speaking as steps and closer dreams and goals, I'm actually working on transferring into a BFA program to get more conservatory type, not necessarily fancy classical, but more hands-on training, because a lot of what is at Mills is outside looking in. I want to be more inside the thing, and that might mean a move. So I'd be exploring theater on the other side of the country. I mean, big goals. I want to be doing big theater. I want to be on Broadway or whatever, but ultimately I want to be able to do this art that I love so much and be able to live while doing this art that I love so much, making things that fulfill me creatively rather than having to do any job that comes up in the field. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Welcome to the undervaluation of artists as a category of contributing members of society. So, more personal side of things, how do you think the pandemic has affected your exploration of your art?
Yeah, it's been hard. It's been hard because, especially the time that I entered going into school, I only had 2 full semesters in person, and the rest of that was music and theater school online, which it's been really hard to connect with people and to make and to have the opportunities to create things. My first semester at Mills, I was able to direct and write this play that I put on, and that was something that I was, oh, I have the resources and I have the opportunity to do this. And then the pandemic hit and it was, okay, I'm in my house. But I do think it's added to my drive to go now that things are a little bit better, and hopefully, I know we're in another surge, but hopefully getting better again. I have all this built up. I want to go out and make things, and I want to create opportunities for myself that I'm kind of go, go, go now. So that's nice. That's the silver lining of the whole situation.
I mean, it sounds like in a lot of the kinds of work that you've been exploring and putting out there and finding that there's a certain amount of a collaborative element to the stuff that you do. Any funny observations or weird stories, or oh my gosh, this one time at band camp? Is there anything like that for you in some of your findings?
I feel like the whole semester I had at ACT was just kind of this chaotic bubble of energy, because it was a cohort and there were only 13 of us, and it was coming right out of a pandemic. Mm. And so I feel like the energy in the room at all times was at 200. I think going back to that class that I was talking about, making the thing that we made, we tried out so many weird things to the point that a couple days before the performance that we had, what if we all got Winnie the Pooh onesies? And what would that mean? And what if we were all performing in these onesies. And so we had a day when everyone came in and tried on these onesies and people were laughing and doing Shakespeare as Winnie the Pooh. And it was the wonderful chaos of trying things out in a safe setting. That was fun.
That's awesome. I have a purple dragon onesie that someone sent me. I'm pretty sure it was a family member. I get a package one day after I'm having a heck of a time in a corporate job, and I see this knee-length purple dragon onesie with a tail, and it's apparently Figment from the Imagineers. It's a Disney thing or something, I guess. I mean, I don't really know, but it came in the mail. So I have this purple dragon onesie, and it came on the heels of a moment where somebody said something like, I had to unironically define the term whimsy to a colleague in this job. Your life is so devoid of this concept of playful delight that you don't know the word?
What?
Oh, no. Oh man, is this the wrong place for me, right?
That's so sad.
Yeah! Oh no, this is terrible. Is there a process by which you come up with an idea in performance spaces, any of your performing arts, in which you have a system by which you process, you go through how you do this? Or are you still figuring that out?
I am in the process of figuring out what works for me and what different kind of systems are the best way for what project. But I think it depends on the medium and on the project and on who's in the room. I kind of like to invent new ways depending on what the project is. Like with my band, we've been bringing in inspiring materials. I found this, I don't know if you've ever been to Urban Ore, but it's like this huge warehouse of junk in Berkeley. And I found objects, lovely junk.
Yes.
And I found this journal that someone had written all about art, and there was poetry and there was drawings and sculpture plans in it that someone had just donated. It was 50 cents. And I was like, this is a gold mine of material, because this is something that came from someone else's creative brain unfiltered. It was so inspiring to me. So we kind of flipped through it and looked at some of the drawings and things. Oh, this is so cool. This line about stars. And what if we wrote a song about that? And so it was just really interesting because it felt like this person whose journal I had found was another collaborator. But I also know in theater settings, sometimes you can start with a game, or you can start with, I want to talk about this particular issue. So it kind of just depends on who's in the room at the time.
Is your creative process more cerebral, mental, or emotional, psychological?
I think it definitely starts emotional. It always comes from some sort of feeling that I want to explore, and then I'll get cerebral with it, especially with poetry and things like that. It'll start with, oh, this feeling is so strong, this feeling is so interesting, and then I'll try to analyze that logically as much as I possibly can, get it into words or get it into notes in my script or things like that, or lyrics or whatever it is.
Is art a vulnerable thing for you?
Totally. I think, yeah, all of the art that I do, I comes from a vulnerable place, because I think that that's kind of what I'm interested in making art, is exploring that connection to emotion that we all have and that we're told not to look into in our day-to-day lives. Yeah.
Do you require an audience for your art that's outside of you?
Not necessarily. I love the exchange that there is between an audience and a performer. I love the energy that there is, but especially for things like poetry, a lot of it is for me to process my own feelings and thoughts and feel better about the world or understand what I'm feeling as I'm going through it, mm-hmm. or just for fun.
Are there things that are going to challenge you personally, emotionally? Are there things that are hard for you in terms of your own internal landscapes? Not mechanically, because obviously, like, everybody has a ton to learn, and that's, we're all learning, right? Is there something that is specifically kidding?
In terms of getting it out and expressing it to an audience, or just in terms of
either,
hard for me to hold?
Either. I think I'm more interested in the latter question, but yes to both.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, there are things that I've been keeping journals for 6 years now, and sometimes I'll catch myself thinking about something and I should journal about it, but I'll like hold myself back from talking about something, even in my own space. And so sometimes I do struggle with like that kind of thing. It's easier for me to say write a poem than sometimes go in my journal. This is exactly what I'm feeling, because in a poem I can sort of make it beautiful. But things aren't always beautiful, of course. So pushing past that and being willing to talk about it to myself and make things about it is ultimately healthy, and it makes good art, because good art is vulnerable and is sometimes scary.
Are there topics that for you are off limits?
Not necessarily, not as a rule.
Is there a kind of expression or a topic that you feel is not open for you to explore, either personally or publicly?
Yeah, I have a hard time exploring any kind of tension within my relationships with other people, just because I worry about if I were to have an audience for this or something like that. I just am very careful about what I will put about people in my life, even if it's not necessarily, it's not like, oh yeah, this person did so and so, but I'm feeling this way because of what this person said and the way that that affected me. Sometimes I will hold back and I will not, like, I won't even touch it because I'm like, ugh, I don't want to make anyone feel bad. So I definitely do have that worry about pleasing other people sometimes when it comes to my art and the things that I'll write and the things that I'll make, which I ultimately think is maybe holding me back a little bit.
That's a real thing for artists to confront and look at and poke around in and figure out for themselves, right? What's your definition of art?
Anything can be art if that's the intention. I think art is self-defined in the way that it's, I'm making something that's self-expression and it's art to me, and therefore it's art self-defined.
So what is not art?
I guess something that doesn't have a creative intention behind it, but I feel like honestly most things have, even in the business world and things, people are drawing on artistic concepts and notions and making something in that way.
So the generative process. Well, in which case, maybe let's sort of poke at intention versus impact. Do you have control
over the impact? I don't think so. Especially in theater, we think that we do. In the world of American realism, we think that we have control over what the audience will feel or what this is going to do to an audience, or we try to control it. The way that everyone takes in the world is so different. Like, everyone ultimately should take away something different, but there definitely are situations where it's, because it depends on the art. I do think in American realism theater, it's spoon-fed to you sometimes. And so I think in that case, we are trying to control it. And so maybe yes, but I think it's better if people are able to take away what they need from different things.
Yeah. I like to say that it's the job of an artist to get people to feel, but not to tell them what to feel.
Yeah.
Do you have an especially proud moment? Ooh, I did my thing and it was totally what I wanted to do with it.
Yeah. I am pretty proud of myself for, I mentioned in my first year at Mills, so 2 years ago now, I took what was a very open creative final for my first year seminar class, which happened to be on the sociology of monsters and monsters in literature, which was a very cool topic for a required first year class. And I decided to write a play and direct it and cast it and produce it. And then we had a performance as my final project. And it was kind of something that I'd never done before. I'd never directed. I had done a little bit of playwriting, never been in a casting room on the other side of the table, but I had this idea and I had this excitement to do it. And so it was the fact that I was able to just explore and lean into that. And I created something that people enjoyed. People were like, oh, that's so cool that you were able to do something that is what you want, what you're here to do, that was different than what the rest of the class was doing. It felt really good to be able to start from that idea and not have all of those ideas of like, well, you have to have experience doing this. You have to know what you're doing and make something that I enjoyed, that I felt really good about, and that other people seem to enjoy too.
So the flip side of that is, talk to me about failures and when things did not go well. And how does that feel? And how does that look? And what do you take from that?
So the first form of art that I got into in terms of training was ballet, which I do not do anymore. But having that be the first kind of art form that I explored in a more formal way gave me this idea that I have to be perfect at everything all the time, and that in order for something to be good, it has to be exactly this way, because ballet is all about form and posture and precise movements, and has this whole history which is also very Western and all of that. And so once I got into other art forms that are maybe less rigid, I still kind of had that idea of it has to be exactly like this. And so failure was really, really hard for me, especially when I was younger. But lately I've been trying to accept that failure is part of the process and how we build things, and rehearsal is for trying things and making mistakes, and that's how you know what works. So I definitely think in the rehearsal room I fail every day, and then I recalibrate and I go, okay, what worked and what didn't.
So then what does success look like? What are the markers of your having been successful?
I like when I get feedback, when people tell me that I made them feel something. That's kind of the highest compliment that I can think of. That feels like a success. Also, feeling in myself that I stretched myself and I grew through whatever project I was doing, that feels like success. Taking joy in the process and in the final product, whatever that is, that feels like success.
Have you found moments that felt dangerous and or people that felt dangerous? And if yes, how do you protect yourself? I've had some really weird experiences as a performing artist. Like people just physical space invasions and just bizarro stuff.
Wow.
Randos with the marriage proposals and stuff tied to my car. Weird, weird stuff, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been pretty lucky. I feel like the spaces that I have been a part of have been pretty fine. But yeah, I do know that in general, it's a weird world to exist in as an artist and as a performer. But yeah, I've been lucky.
Hey, that's fantastic. I'm super. What about ethics? I asked you a little bit about intent versus impact. What are some of your ethical lines relative to your creative process?
I had a kind of an in-depth conversation with some of the members of my cohort about how, especially as actors and singers, as performers, we're told that you should just take any job and you should be happy to have it. But I think that that completely denies the fact that there are certain jobs that maybe you shouldn't take in order to be responsible and making sure that the industry is holding up the people that it should be holding up. And examples of casting a white person in a role that should not be a white person. And then that's on you. It's on the casting director to find someone, but it's also on you if you're offered something like that to say no, even if it's a good opportunity, because that's what's right and what is gonna uplift the community as a whole. Yeah. So I definitely try to be careful about what I will say yes to along an ethical line.
Are there people you don't want to work for, or a kinds of ways of doing business you don't want to participate in?
I haven't had the opportunity to be a part of bigger, the mechanical, larger artistic places, just like big professional theaters and stuff that kind of feel like they can do whatever they want. I know that once you do get to that level, it can be kind of a dangerous game of, yes, this is good for your career, but it can be more soul-sucking than the smaller things.
Sure. And the responsibility then comes back to stuff like, don't step on the faces of others as you're climbing that ladder, right? As you're trying to get where you want to go.
Totally, yeah.
Tell me your origin story. How did you start out as an artist? Like, when was the first moment you looked at yourself and said, yep, there's no mistaking. I know who I am and what I'm supposed to do in this world.
I think I always kind of knew that I wanted to be an artist. I don't know at what age I started saying this, but I know I used to tell my mom, when I grow up, I'm going to be a singer, actor, dancer, artist, writer, all one big long string. But I do remember after I did my first musical, which was Alice in Wonderland Jr., I remember being, oh, I can take these things. I can take singing, which I love so much. I can take acting, which I love so much, and dancing, which I love so much, storytelling, and that can be all one thing. And I fell in love with doing musical theater from there. All of these things that I do in musical theater, the number one brings me the most joy. And I just remember after doing that first musical, even though it was a bunch of little kids, totally silly, I was, this is what I want to do. This is all of the things that I love to do so much wrapped up into one thing.
Dig it. Who do you want to collaborate with?
I am really excited to collaborate with some of the people that I've had in my classes this last semester and over the past few years, because being in a class together and seeing how people work and think, oh, I want to do a project together. I want to write something. I want to direct something with these people, because it was very much acting focused. And a lot of the people in the room were also writers and directors.
There is this one person, Catherine Bejena Benitez, who I met in the cohort and who is also a amazing multimedia artist who's super interested in writing queer plays and stories and poetry and creating spaces for queer voices to be heard and to collaborate together. And I would absolutely love to collaborate with them in the future.
Nice. What are some of the hard conversations you want to have in your art that maybe don't get enough attention platform?
Because I'm like, hard conversations, well, it's hard enough for me to talk about things to myself sometimes. But like I said, I need to hold myself up to that standard of art should be vulnerable, art should be scary. I guess I want to talk about, well, it's hard. It's hard for me.
By naming stuff, I think we have an opportunity. A friend of mine likes to say, they like to say, it's all information, and information is something you can work with. Mm. And that has been incredibly valuable to mull over.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I want to talk about intergenerational family trauma and healing that kind of thing, and addressing the inner child that maybe needs addressing and needs her little artistic voice to be able to come out and to shine and to be heard. But obviously it's very difficult, but I think that's why it's important and why it's something that I should explore.
That sounds like good work in the world. When I was at Mills, I got involved in censorship issues in the studio arts department about my own topics regarding intergenerational trauma. I had an interactive piece in the gallery where people could share their own stories and experiences and words that were hurtful to then later be burned unread, sort of as an effigy and as a release for people.
I love that.
Oh, that was a hard project. But the topic was not fun. And Ron Nagel, who's the ceramics professor at the time, ended up getting in arguments with school administration about censorship and involved the ACLU.
Oh, no.
Well, because it's not that the work itself was damaging, it's just that it was challenging and it brought up hard stuff. Mm-hmm. I think there's absolutely a place for having those conversations, because you can't heal what you don't acknowledge is wounded. Which brings me maybe to my next question, and that is, you mentioned some stuff about, as a theater person, looking along ethical lines about who are you not willing to work with and how not to slip into these tropes and tracks. What is your responsibility to your fellow artists and or future artists? I am asking a lot of people to really think deeply about their relationships to their creative process. I think that's where the juiciness is.
In terms of making ethical choices.
Mm-hmm. And legacies of making the art world better after you.
I mean, also speaking to the perfectionism I learned in certain areas of art, I think that creating more spaces that feel fully safe in order to create things that are maybe hard or scary or make you feel and so there's an administrational fight about it. I think it's really important that people are able to feel fully safe and supported in art making spaces and not have so much emphasis on perfectionism and product. I think that there's so much emphasis on product and selling and what are people going to buy that it dampens the process and the spark. And so any way that I can be a part of making the spaces that I'm in feel safe and supportive and open is really important to me.
The commodification of art. What do you think makes something commercially successful? What do you think the powers that be or have the purse strings think is their golden ticket?
I think anything that is not messy and that is easy to digest. So that means nothing that's going to make people uncomfortable. I think that in some cases, making people uncomfortable, in the case of talking about trauma or talking about hard societal issues, that's how you bring about internal and external change. And that can be really important. Anything like that, anything that's going to make people uncomfortable, I don't think the powers that be are going to necessarily want. It's going to be clean, polished, as close to perfection as you can get. And I honestly think there's so much beauty in something being a little bit imperfect and being a little bit rough, especially in art, because it shows the process and the grit and love that goes into making it.
Yeah, it's funny. That brought to mind a couple of comedians who've done things that are absolutely not funny. And they've been incredibly vulnerable and sincere and shared their deepest stuff that has transformed viewers, listeners. Hannah Gadsby and Tig Notaro, and the stuff that is most raw is the thing that always hooks people back into global sensations of art. That's the stuff that really does take people by storm. But yeah, the people who hold the purse strings, I think, maybe miss the beat of allowing space for the rough. What are some of the old stories and tropes and historical references in art that you want to revisit and reimagine? And monsters, right? That's a thing that you mentioned from a survey course. But what's a place that you can add your voice to?
Yeah, I mean, monsters got me thinking a project that I did. Both of the plays that I have worked on have been referential to history in different ways. So the one that I did at Mills was about the Medusa myth, but looking at it from a modern perspective of rape culture and this corrupt court system in which sexual assault cases are often dropped or not really spoken about, or people get away without any time or not much time at all. So looking at the Medusa myth and Medusa as a figure within that, I think it's interesting to return to really old stuff. Myths, and especially myths with such powerful characters, gods and goddesses and monsters, and to use those to tell the stories we're trying to tell now. The other play that I worked on, I co-wrote. It was kind of just for fun, but it was a historical lesbian period piece. These two girls at a college in the 1800s, and they fall in love, but they have to keep it a secret, this whole thing, which I think also speaks to the idea of using tropes that we're familiar with and bringing to light stories that maybe people don't want to talk about as much, or stories that we need to talk about now, but that would never have been presented in that particular time period. I think that's really interesting.
Is there a place you see these sapphic explorations coming through in your art in particular? Is the queerness a part of your storytelling more broadly out in the world?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's a big part of who I am as a person. And so because my art is really personal, there's really like no way to separate the queerness from myself and from my art. It's all there. My poetry, I talk a lot about love and relationships, and there's poems about my partner and the experience of queer joy and queer love and how that's kind of its own unique magical thing. I think that shows up in my work a lot. Yeah.
I love the themes of artists as transgressors. And a significant theme in particular with this project of podcasts is just how many subversive, and that word has been used pejoratively and positively among people over decades and centuries, but just how many artists specifically are about thumbing the nose at convention and or mainstream, and the mainstream of any given century. And Victoriana and Hellenic stuff all plays into it, Roman parts far and wide. Is there a place in the world geographically you would like to explore and take your art and your learning about your creative process?
There are so many places I would love to go and explore artistically. I was thinking about going to school in London for a while. So for a while I was interested in in exploring Shakespearean roots of theater over there. I'd love to go to Greece for so many reasons. I mean, who wouldn't? But I'm interested in, of course, theater. I mean, I don't think it was the birthplace of theater. I think people have been acting and singing since people have been people, but the deep roots in theater there and in music, and also just to see the temples and the gods and the goddesses and soak in all of that history. I think that that would be so interesting and transformative. I made a friend recently who's an artist who lives in Brazil, and she was talking about how almost all the theater in her state is this kind of devised political, deeply political, deeply community rooted art. And I would love to go and explore that and be a part of that, soak that in. So yeah, there's so many places I would love to go and explore and work.
Talk to me about government and propaganda relative to theater.
I learned something recently about realism in theater and how it's an American thing to be so heavily, so this is the way that we do things here, and how realistic theater has been used a lot in a similar way that movies have to be this force of propaganda because of the structure of it, because it doesn't allow for the audience to create its own conclusion. It's very much what's happening on stage is real, is as real as we can make it, and we want you to feel exactly this. And in other countries, they don't necessarily do that. I've been told that in Germany, the realistic theater was used a lot during World War II, and now it's not used pretty much at all because of that. So I think it's definitely interesting to examine where some of these things that we hold so high and mighty come from, and their potential for good, and also their potential for not so good.
Yeah. So talk to me about truth and theater and art. What is true in theater?
That's especially hard for something like theater, because acting is so, is it true? Is it not? Are we lying? Are we feeling? Are we really feeling? So that's something that I've thought about a lot just in acting work, because I try to be as truthful as I can in terms of accessing and feeling what my character is going through. But there's also kind of an ethical and a self-care limit to that. There are some professors and like Lee Strasberg, masters, old masters in the fields who kind of believe in taking your trauma and going straight for it and putting yourself through hell for that truth that people are looking for. And I think that there's definitely a balance between accessing real emotion in yourself and also protecting yourself in certain situations. That's a line that I've had to walk and explore. I think truth is really important in theater, and also there's a limit.
Do you think that limit changes depending on the audience or the performer?
I think it can depend on the performer, yeah. I think it's a personal balancing act that the performer can do in terms of deciding, hey, what feels okay for me and what doesn't.
Final questions. If you could give a younger person or a new person in this field any advice of something you stumbled upon or discovered or found out or just want them to be able to take away, what would you say to them?
I would definitely say don't be afraid to try things out and make mistakes and get messy and fail and try again, because that has really, I have made me a better artist and a better person once I realized that not everything has to be so perfect and polished. And we do live in a world where, like we said earlier, the powers that be want something that it seems like everything has to be perfect. Everything has to be just this way. It can't be messy. It can't be subversive. But I think that in order to find yourself as an artist and in order to create work that's going to move people, you have to be willing to push yourself out of your comfort zone and try things. I also think just collaborate as much as you possibly can. Get to know as many people as you possibly can. Be open to seeing the art in everything in the world. Lately, I've been realizing that inspiration doesn't have to be this thing that you wait for and then it hits you, but that if you're open to receiving it, inspiration is everywhere, because everything is so artistic and everything has so much potential within it. You have to open your heart to be able to see that.
Nice, I like it. Where can people find and or hire you? How do people connect with you and maybe reach out for other collaborations or upcoming projects or see shows or find your work.
Yeah, totally. Totally. The best place to find my work and keep up with the projects that I'm working on and the things that I'm doing, probably social media platforms. I use Instagram, which is just my name, Lilith Era. And I have a Facebook page that's Likeable, which is also under my name. And then in terms of collaborations, probably the best way to reach out would be email, which is also my name, lilithera@gmail.com. If anyone is listening and is, I would love to collaborate and work on a project, write a play, direct a play, act in something, write a poem, etc., etc. That would be amazing. That honestly sounds wonderful. So yeah, Instagram, Facebook, email, those are all good ways to reach me.
And then final question, this is my favorite one. If you were a Muppet, what Muppet or combination of Muppets would you be?
So I saw this question on the list of questions and I was, oh, I have to have a good answer. I Googled a picture of all the Muppets because I was like, I need to make sure that I'm saying the right one.
It could be a combination of Muppets if you really struggled. That's the other part that like...
Well, my initial reaction was maybe I would be Animal, just like my little Aries coming out. But then I thought about it more and I actually think that I'd be Fozzie Bear. Because I'm here to have a good time. I love performing. I'm a little silly. I'm soft and cuddly.
I love it.
I'm loyal.
Yeah. Oh, Fozzie Bear is so good. Actually, the first thought I had about you is Red Fraggle.
That's kind of what I look like.
I mean, yes, but also for listeners who don't know, Lilith has a shock of curly red hair. Is it still, actually, you're kind of letting it show, it seems like. Like, it's darker now.
This is my natural hair color, so it's not red anymore, it's brown now, but it's still, like, kind of curly and poofy.
That's fair. It's funny because, like, as a much smaller Sproggin, you've always had the red.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for funsies, in case someone wants an extra later, do you have any questions for me?
What Muppet would you be?
I'm a combo Muppet.
Okay.
I'm definitely a combo Muppet. I have a certain amount of Gonzo.
Mm-hmm. Can see that.
I have a certain amount of Fozzie Bear.
I see that, too.
The dad jokes, the dad humor is so good, though. So good. And I'm a not insignificant amount Rolf.
Which one is that?
That's the dog, the piano player.
Okay. Love that.
And he's just kind of holding it down. He's doing the mood of the room.
Yeah.
Keeping it pretty chill most of the time.
Definitely the chillest Muppet.
Rolf is pretty great. I feel like that's a pretty good one. Gonzo is not that chill. But that's okay. He's just...
You know what? There's a balance.
I love the way that people think about these characters, too. Like, it's super fun.
It's such a fun question.
Yeah. I once asked it for a job interview. You know, at the end of a very serious, very uptight series of conversations where I had the ready answer at my fingertips. And it was very smooth and articulate and very clean. And I just had a hunch I needed to ask this question. And I said, if you were a Muppet, what Muppet would you be? And they were like confused. And they're like, I've never seen it. I don't know. No, we're probably not going to get along all that well, are we?
Aww.
Oh, you can't embrace the just doing it because you love it? Yeah, it's not going
to. That's such a wonderful question for at the end of a job interview, because I'm always like, oh, I have to come up with something super smart sounding. But if I was an interviewer and someone asked me what Muppet I would be, I would be like, oh, you're hired.
On the spot.
I love asking that kind of, it's not necessarily disarming, but a question that someone doesn't have a specific ready, perfect answer for.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I want to know is, how do you think on your feet? What's your nature when you don't have a script to follow?
Yeah.
I once asked that of Scott's mom the first time I met her.
Oh.
I was down at this Thai restaurant and she asked me, so who are you and what's your family like and are you good enough? And it was like 45 minutes of grilling me. And then she asked me like, do you have any questions for me? I was like, yeah, hi, what's your name?
What's your name? What Muppet would you be?
No. And in fact, the next question was, so she was like, oh, shoot, I just totally did an embarrassing. This was an interview rather than meeting someone in a conversational way for the first time. And then I was like, what was it like the first time you rode a bicycle? Because we were talking about family upbringings and stuff. And she totally startled her. It was not something she had in her back pocket ready for a perfect answer with this person in front of her girlfriend. But, and we got to, like, it just opened everything right up because it wasn't about being on.
Yeah.
It was just about, huh. How do you think about your nostalgia, your recollection of events in history? And
I love that. I'm going to keep that in my back pocket. It's such a, yeah, it's such a wonderful way to open up a conversation and get someone out of their head.
I like asking people questions that are about telling stories, because a short closed answer, yes, no, 1954. Yeah, but that doesn't tell me anything about the way that you view the world.
Yeah, totally.
So I like that. This has been Mixed Media Talks. I'm your host, Amelia Hogan. Today's guest was Lilith Era. If you would like to support this podcast, you can find us on patreon.com and subscribe. And for that, you get extra goodies. patreon.com/mixedmedia_talks.
With your hands in your pockets, but my heart in that locket.